morning. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to Lehigh Valley Business Beat this evening. The Lehigh Valley is booming, and that's why Business Beat brings you a program keeping a tab on the who, what, when, where, why, and how our area is growing and innovating. I am Sally Hanlon, your host of the program that brings this important aspect of our community together for us for conversations. Tonight, we're talking about corporate culture, the who's, what, why, how's, and should every business, regardless of size, examine their corporate culture? Our guests this evening have a wealth of knowledge with this topic. Both are experienced consultants in this field. Anita Crick, AMK, Strategic Growth Consulting Company, and John Foster, MBA, Pathfinder Group. So what I'd like to do is start out with both John and Anita introducing themselves. Anita, you may not need introduction to this audience because you're well known in the Valley, but please just share some of your experience, some of your background, and then John will come to you and talk about your background on this topic.
Sounds good, Sally. I'd love to. That's always fun to talk about yourself. I've been in the Valley for more years than I can count and started out in the finance world working for a company that many might remember at one time was named Finance America, was, Chrysler First, et cetera, et cetera. And somewhere along the line, I got into human resources and led the HR efforts for the last group that we were in, which was part of Nations Bank. And after that, I went to Wright Management Consulting as someone that was responsible for managing their key accounts and marketing their career transition and organizational consulting. So I've had a dearth of experience in the world of human capital management. Got out for a little while and decided I couldn't get out and got back and started my own company, AMK Strategic Growth Consulting. And my big deal has always been culture, because as I've said many times to people, it's culture that made me leave more than had me stay. So I'm excited to be here and linked in with John Foster's group.
Well, and I think you're so correct in that corporate culture, from what I hear from other people, seems to be the reason most people will leave a company because of what's happening in that company, even though they might like what they're doing. So I'm glad we're bringing this topic to the surface and talking about it. So, John, let's talk about you and Pathfinder Group and how you two got together, because you're in Florida, correct, John?
I am.
Okay.
I suppose that I should mention that I'm the oldest of 10, and that really explains a lot of the behaviors that led me down the path that I traveled. I've been self-employed forever. In fact, the first time I had a W-2 was 4 years ago when the University of Tampa asked me to come teach, which was an interesting experience insofar as I taught family business there. I've owned a number of businesses through the year across a smattering of different industries. I retired in 2005 after taking a company that we started from a blank sheet of paper and growing that to a national company with a smattering of international customers. So I wouldn't really call it an international company. I took a couple of years off, got my captain's license, went sailing, and really got the itch to get back into helping companies who, in my view, are the backbone of job creation in this country, to help them, because there was such evidence that in family businesses, for example, that they really did not sustain one generation to the other, and that very, very few businesses really accomplished the American dream that they had envisioned when they got started. And along this journey of focusing on growth and exit planning, we discovered that culture was really the root cause behind whether organizations succeeded or failed. It's not the only variable, but it was one of the bedrock variables that contributed to the explanation of just how well or poorly an organization did. And so that led us to really developing Pathfinder Group to help organizations understand what are the levers that drive value in your company. And when culture is one of the components that's keeping you from hitting the mark, how can we, in a very real way, help drive that? So we hope to make the case today that it's really culture that contributes to the success of you realizing your vision and your mission. It's not something that is the same as, it stands apart from and contributes to that vision and mission in a very real way.
I couldn't agree with you more, having been at the Small Business Development Center at Lehigh and working with a lot of businesses, family-owned businesses in particular. You knew if it was going to second generation, it probably wasn't going to succeed. The numbers were just so amazingly high for failure in those situations. I was so surprised because you would think that, you're from your family, you're raised in it, you'd sort of have a real good feel for it, but not so.
Very true.
Okay, so let's get into some questions about it's not necessarily the only reason that a company needs to succeed, but why have a stated corporate culture? And is it only for larger businesses? Is it for public, private, government? I mean, who all needs to have this, John? And is there a difference in the type of business entity and the type of culture that they need to support or state or encourage?
I think it's important to recognize that every organization has a culture. It's either an intentional culture that's developed by leadership, or it's a de facto culture. And the challenge with a de facto culture is that if everybody's behavior is positively aligned by happenstance with the vision and mission of the company, great. But what if it's a toxic culture? And all too often, that ends up being the case. So I'd like to start by acknowledging that they all have a culture. And I'd like to agree that for the most part, every organization, I don't care if it's a government organization, a nonprofit organization, a for-profit, private, or a public organization, delivers or tries to deliver a product or service to their constituents. And delivering that product and service and all the promises attended to it are a function of people making that happen. And so I would argue that it's the aggregate of those behaviors that are either aligned with that vision and that mission in service of delivering those promises around the product or service that constitutes culture. And so we think that if you're going to have a culture, an intentional culture, it's got to start by identifying what are the behaviors that we want to see in order to fulfill whatever our promise is in service of the vision and mission? That is an essential element to understand. It's not the vision and mission, it's not the values by themselves. You've got to go deeper into, from an anthropological perspective, the behaviors that you want to see. That's culture.
And who is responsible, John, in the organization for helping to define this intentional culture?
Great question. If the tone at the top isn't in tune with driving these behaviors, it's not going to be a successful enterprise. It's absolutely going to be a failed project that people will move away from after 90 days, after 180 days. The leadership has to drive this change, this transformation.
Anita, any thoughts from your end too?
Yeah, no, I was going to say that it's critical that it begins at the top because that's where people look. You can't hide from people looking at the top to see what's going on. That's what they talk about.
Well, and that's how they model themselves. I mean, their behavior will mimic
Right.
or try to be in compliance with what they see at the
Right.
top.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, Anita, let me talk to you about the challenges. I mean, you've been in a number of different businesses and you helped a lot of businesses with right management. What are the challenges when it comes to defining the culture and hiring for that culture or changing it?
Right. And as I said earlier, it was probably one of the major reasons why I decided to move on when I did. I think the most important thing is that, to John's earlier point, that companies look at culture in so many different ways. And I'm not sure how it ever got to that point, other than somebody said the word culture way back when, and the next thing you know, everybody's defining it the way they want. And many companies look at perks, you know, in quotes, perks, as the heart of their culture. Like, for instance, they'll offer free lunch, or there's some lofty time off policies that they might have. Although COVID made this change, at one time, offering people the ability to work from home was what was known as a perk. I could go on and on about all these great programs. And I sat in rooms with senior leadership, myself being one of those, saying, you know, what can we do to really get people going? And somebody would come up with another idea, which was another perk. And these don't set the culture. I go back. These are just perks. They're fruits of people's labor in their minds. But there's another swing that happened where people would set values as their culture. So you'd walk into an office, and when I was part of Wright, I walked into many offices, and you'd see this big banner or a big plaque on the wall with words, values, if you will. And one of the things that used to bother me about it, and probably how I got connected to Pathfinder, was I thought, these are just words. These don't mean anything. And in fact, I always tell a story about, and I won't get into the ins and outs of it, but it took one of the employees to determine exactly what the values were of an organization by talking about how he behaved. And nobody else said that. Everybody from the top on were talking about, oh, yeah, we trust, we have quality, we have this, we have that. But when it got down to it, this gentleman said that if I do not do this, everything falls apart. It was an amazing thing. But that's the problem with values, that they can be interpreted individually, and that can lead to ambiguity, sorry, and probably all those other words as well. But when somebody looks at a word and interprets it the way they want to, then you have all these different things going on in an organization. But when you define behavior, you really have it set. It becomes a piece, an ingredient of what goes on there.
Okay, I'm going to just stop you right here because we have to take a quick break. We'll come
Okay.
back to this issue after break, but I just want to remind our listeners that they're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse with our guest who was just speaking, Anita Crick of AMK Strategic Growth Consulting Company and John Foster of Pathfinder Group. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, WDIY devotees. I'm Mike McGrath, and I am pleased as a purple tomato to announce that You Bet Your Garden has moved to WDIY FM. Listen every Friday evening at 6 p.m. and hear about all the mistakes you are going to make on Saturday morning before you make them. That's all new episodes of You Bet Your Garden every Friday on 88.1.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Business Beat Discourse Program. We are talking about corporate culture and its importance for having a successful business. And before we went to break, we were talking about the challenges of corporate culture and how some businesses misdefine culture because they use perks and values. And Anita was expressing that defined behaviors and practicing that behavior are so important. So Anita, of AMK Strategic Growth Consulting Company, please continue, and then we'll bring in John Foster from Pathfinder Group.
Sure. I can simplify how you would view this as a business by simply saying this. There are really just two overarching concerns that organizations have, and it doesn't matter whether it's for profit or not for profit. It's how do you make the sale happen, or how do you make the service happen, and how do we deliver on those sales promises or those service promises? And everything is really centered around those two things. You're in business or you're in service to deliver the business or the service. So a critical component of that is cultivating a culture around, and here's the big give, around the explicit behavior that are aligned with delivering those priorities. Those are priorities of any organization. Why be in it if you aren't delivering a service or making a sale? And how can you do that if you're not aligning your behavior from the top all the way down to those two needs, if you will? So,
Anita, excuse me, when you say explicit, because you know you're really defining the individual behaviors, can you give us an example of what an explicit behavior might be that a business should consider?
Sure. Here's a simple one. We will be on time all the time with everything that we are promised to deliver. That is a simple behavior. But if anybody in an organization does not look at being on time, it could affect all of the steps that go before it or after it in delivering a sale or a service. Now, that sounds pretty parochial. It sounds, well, really? You're going to define it that way? But if people are walking around and they're going to a meeting, for instance, Sally, and the very person that's leading the meeting, be it the CEO or the head of the department, isn't on time, you're eating up the behavior of everybody else. So as we define these behaviors, they get very explicit. And they are more than just four or five words on the wall. That becomes the way we do things around here. And that's the tone that starts at the top that defines the behavior that makes it visible for everybody to say, yeah, this is the way we do things around here. So yeah, it does get explicit. And that's where companies miss all the time. Because again, going back to the values or the perks, those are things that people just see and miss. But behavior, you don't.
Well, you know, it was interesting, Anita, and you can appreciate this. When I was in banking and I had the call center, one of the perks, which was misinterpreted as being a value, was dress down Friday. And what happened was I have always been a proponent of, you will project and portray based on how you look, how you're acting. So if you're in jeans, you're very casual. If you're more in business attire, it's more professional. Yes. And I struggled with Dress Down Friday.
So did I, Sally.
I said
one time we should have a dress up Friday where we come in tuxes and long gowns, you know.
John, would you like to add anything to this challenges?
I just like to add, when you're thinking in terms of the difference between values and behaviors, as Anita was referring to, most companies have the usual 5 to 7 values. When we take an organization through the exercise of identifying the behaviors that need to happen in order to deliver those promises that Anita referred to, companies come up with between 20 and 40, in some instances, actual behaviors that they then work to define with our help. Yeah, it's important to understand. We're not talking about what are the three big behaviors that we need to practice in order to be excellent in what we're trying to do. It really is anywhere from 15 to 20 to 40, which is on the high side, behaviors that leadership, when they hunker down and go through this process of thinking it through, come up with that are important to them to start practicing. And so then we set about practicing in some pretty specific ways that wrap rituals around them to make it easier to eat the elephant one spoon at a time. But it's really, as we talked about earlier, identifying the specific behaviors that are aligned with your vision and your mission that you believe, you being leadership, are critical to successfully competing together in a pretty competitive environment.
Okay, so now I'm listening as a business owner, and I'm hearing I should be maybe looking more closely and developing the corporate culture in alignment with where I think the business needs to go and do. Is there research, John, to support the importance of corporate culture? Do you have anything that can help maybe shed some light on the, you know, maybe the operational aspects and how it improves, or the profitability, or anything like that?
Sure, that would be helpful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, aside from Peter Drucker, who, given that your audience is a business audience, they certainly know Peter Drucker. And Peter famously said that culture eats strategy for breakfast. We all know that a strategic plan is important. We also know that most strategic plans are never implemented or not fully implemented. And a lot of that is linked to culture. And so John Cotter and his partner, Jim Haskert, released a book in 1992 called Corporate Culture and Performance. And they shared the results of what was an 11-year study and included 200 companies. Now, most of these companies were publicly traded companies, but the truth of what I'm about to share is still relevant to the rest of the audience who may be operating in a nonprofit or a government agency or a private family business. There were four key findings that came out of this 11-year study. The first finding was there was indeed a significant performance difference. And I won't get too deep into the details, but I will say that the four metrics that they used were revenue growth, stock price differences, net income growth differences, and job creation and retention. So those were four metrics that they were looking at that distinguished companies who were intentional about creating a culture that was adaptive to the marketplace, and those who did not have the development of a culture as part of their strategic initiative. The other three things were they established a causal relationship between cultural attributes and their link to success. Think about that. They established a cause and effect relationship between if I practice these behaviors that I believe are aligned with my vision and mission, then the desired effect, success, that I'm looking for is far more likely. That's huge. And then, of course, we talked about this a little bit earlier when Anita talked about the importance of leadership. The tone at the top is essential to driving this as a sustainable activity. Think of it as a forever activity. You don't just do this for 90 days. It's not a new project that we're going to take off the shelf and put back on the shelf. This is something that's transformative. And then finally, there were few things that they thought, and from this study, were superior to culture in creating a sustainable competitive advantage. Think of it this way. I can poach your top performers if I'm your competitor. I can offer them more money. I can try to emulate the successful products that you develop or match the services that you try to bring to the marketplace. But what I can't do is I can't steal the secret sauce that drives your people to drive the success that you're experiencing. And I'll give you just one example. If my people stay because the culture aligns with their needs, I reduce turnover, I improve my margins, and I create institutional knowledge that gives me another competitive advantage in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And the implications of these, and I want to read this so I get it right, that came out of their book. The implications were, for doing this, according to Haskert and Cotter, were the study underscores the importance of intentionally cultivating a strong, adaptive culture as a driver of superior business performance. It suggests that companies investing in cultural development can expect to see substantial benefits in terms of growth, profitability, and market valuation.
Yeah,
impressive
significant.
Research.
Yep, yeah. Pretty significant. Now we're going to be winding down shortly. So there's one other area that I would like to make sure we incorporate it, because as you said, we have business listeners on this program. And this goes to Anita. How does one hire new employees and evaluate their ability to fit into a corporate culture?
Well, I guess the simple answer to that is if they're hiring, they need to look very closely at the pieces that are offered by the employee that reflect how they would behave in their behavioral-based culture. So, in other words, they would ask the questions that would be reflective of the answers that they want about the behaviors that they show in their organization. Because, to an earlier point that John made, what you don't want to have to go through is employee, you don't want to lose your employees. So you want to make sure that fits there from the get-go. So you're going to ask the questions that would reflect the answers about how they would fit in with the behaviors. And if you define those behaviors in your organization, and in fact you show them to the prospective employee, how do you handle these behaviors? I think you almost instantly have your answers after doing all the other things that you do when you're hiring employees. But once you hire them and you feel you've made the right choice, Sally, you don't want to lose them. So employee, culture will be a major contributor to the turnover. If somebody comes into your organization because they understand the way you do things, the way, which is the behaviors that you've defined, then culture is not the reason somebody's going to leave. They're not. I one of the things that I want to stress is today we have four generations, arguably a fifth coming up in our corporate cultures, in our organizations, be it non-for-profit. And every single one of them should know the way we do things around here because each of the generations are going to interpret things very differently.
Oh, how true.
Right? So if there's just words on the wall, that ambiguity is going to be even more highlighted in an organization. But behaviors will scan each of them. So there's no hidden meanings. And therefore, me as an employee, my loyalty to the company is as a whole, and the role that I play and the behavior that I emulate makes me feel more closely tied to my organization, and therefore my role becomes self-important, and my loyalty is very solid. So, just simply put, defining those behaviors from start doesn't necessarily mean it's going to finish with somebody walking out the door. It's just the opposite.
Okay. Well, we've
Yeah.
got about a minute to go.
Okay.
So, John, any last thoughts and how to reach you if somebody's interested, your website, and same for you then, Anita.
Sure. Our website is pathfindergroupus.com, of course, and my phone number is 813-716-2286.
Okay. And any last thought you want to add to that? And
I would simply say that, if you've got some questions and you're curious, certainly give us a call and we'd be happy to talk you through it. But step back and reflect on what you've heard here and think about whether or not you're seeing the evidence of behaviors in your organization that are either contributing to success or really preventing you from realizing the success that you really envisioned when you started.
okay. Anita, how do they reach you? And any last comment?
First of all, I'm in LinkedIn, but call me and I'll be there. I'm at 484-951-0870. Would love to have that conversation at any time. So feel free. All
Could
right.
I add one thing, Sally? In
Sure,
this
John.
world where we're spammed with calls that are not identified, if anybody calls in, leave a message
Yes.
because I don't
Good.
answer calls from numbers I don't recognize.
And also say you heard it on WDIY.
Yeah,
Correct.
that's there you
Correct.
go. Right,
Please.
exactly right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Anita Crick, AMK Strategic Growth Consulting Company, and John Foster of Pathfinder Group for taking the time to share this very important information with our businesses here in the greater Lehigh Valley. Thank you, listeners, for making time for this conversation. You can also find past episodes and other public affairs programming at WDIY.org and on major podcast platforms. I am Sally Hanlon. This is WDIY 88.1 FM. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we'll see you next time on Business Beat.